Hello there, comic book fans. Welcome to episode 44 of Comic Review Weekly, the podcast where you get the lowdown on comic books. Hosted by me, Andy Slaughter, also with Brian Shear and Marty Blevins. Comic Review Weekly is brought to you by the creative minds at Jackrabbit Studios, home of Gravy Boy, the comic for folks who like a little hero in their heroes. Check it out at www.gravyboy.com. It's great to have you here. It's my goal to get you to try out a few new titles that you may not have otherwise considered, or possibly to save you a few dollars by helping you avoid a really bad comic book. We've got a few short reviews on this week's show. First, from Boom Studios, we see more of Exile and Hero Squared, followed by Marvel Comics Runaways, which I spoke a little about in the last show, but I'm going to give a few more details today. So, yeah, Boom Studios, always some good books from Boom Studios. Original, just kind of a different flavor. You know, whether you like it or not, sometimes it tends to be on the darker side, but it's got a different flavor from other publishers right now. Let's see, I think we reviewed both Exile and Hero Squared on the show before, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on backstory. All in all, both of these are great books that I look forward to reading now. So, Exile is pretty much your basic stranded on a mysterious island story, similar in vein to Jurassic Park and Lost. The creative team on this book is comprised of Andrew Cosby and Michael Allen Nelson of War of the Worlds Second Wave, with artwork by Greg Scott and coloring by, if I pronounce this correctly, Sundar Raj. The cast of characters is also a somewhat standard group that you would expect in a story like this. In the first issue, they were a college biological research group that chartered a boat to investigate some weird ocean life that washed up on the nearby beach. There's Dr. Keller, the lead scientist, and his, of course, blonde hottie daughter Sarah, along with more students and Dr. Keller's colleague Marcus, who, like other comic book characters lately, has the exact same visage as Samuel L. Jackson. He's in a lot of comic books now. He's Nick Fury in the Ultimate Universe, and probably a couple more that I'm not thinking about. So, anyway, to add some dramatic tension in the group, we have Captain Greer and his assistant Benga, who resembles the wrestling movie star The Rock. And they're the somewhat swarthy crew of the chartered boat. All right, so last issue, the boat is lost at sea in a bad electric storm, and after a few uncomfortable days on a raft, the survivors wash up on the island. Having no idea of the danger that awaits them, pretty soon monsters show up and not everybody escapes. The captain decides that everyone should go for the highest ground possible in the hopes that their half-working radio can get a transmission through. On the way there, they make camp, and the next morning, Sarah is missing. Sarah, again, is the Dr. Keller's daughter. Before Dr. Keller can get one of the captain's guns to go searching for, an unknown person points a pistol at his skull. And that's where the issue ends. So you've kind of got some similarities with Lost there, with people going missing, and you've got tension between the characters, and it's on an island. But that's about it, because I think it's going to diverge from that, from the expectations of people who watch Lost pretty quickly. Anyway, overall, this book has a fine package of storytelling skill. One of the things that stands out to me right now from the start is how the reader is given conflict and drama without resorting to two-dimensional characters. For example, between the last issue and now, it's clear that the captain and Benga are both antagonists of sorts. They're bossy and generally uncooperative with the rest of the group. There's a definite class warfare tension going on here between the men of the sea and the educated elite they are now trapped with. However, they're not totally painted in one shade. When one of the students is attacked by the monsters on the island, oh yeah, there are monsters on the island, genuinely scary looking ones too, Benga and the captain both try and save her at personal risk. Also, while a little hostile to the group, they aren't openly violent or anything. So yeah, good characterizations and very believable dialogue should make this book stand out from other stuff on the shelf, in my opinion. The artwork by Greg Scott, with the colorization by Sundar Raj, is also unique. It has a very simple, subdued flavor to it. I don't understand, however, why Sarah's dad only looks five years older than she does. The figures and expressions are well rendered, though. Very likely there's a good amount of reference drawing being done here. And from what I can tell, it employs bold, heavy line work with deep shadows. Thankfully, this is balanced out by the lightness and detail in facial expressions and movements. Anyway, like I said, it's very, very unique flavor. I recommend this book to anyone looking for a new sci-fi horror read that doesn't involve zombies. Exile receives 4 out of 5 stars. Also from Boom Studios, Comic Review Weekly has been following the series Hero Squared, written by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMattier, with pencils from Joe Abraham and color by Ron Riley. Hero Squared shows us what happens when a basically good-natured slacker gets visited by his superhero alter ego from another universe. Milo Stone's life has not been the same since then, as he and his counterpart, Captain Valor, attempt to make peace and live on the same planet together. The plots thus far have relied heavily on the two protagonists bickering and acting like angry children when together. The main threat in the story is posed by a villainess named Kalinius, who in fact is Captain Valor's ex-girlfriend, who turned to evil and destroyed his universe when she found out that he cheated on her in a moment of weakness. Yep, you heard me correctly. Folks, it's Giffen and DeMattier. Anything can happen. Anyway, as it turns out, Kalinus' counterpart on our Earth is Milo's current girlfriend, Steffi. And guess who cheats on her with a moment of weakness? It's Milo, and he cheats on her with Kalinus. So that kind of brings us up to issue 3. Twisted love, betrayed trusts, and fanboy bathroom humor make up for a pretty darn good time here in Hero Squared. Even with all of the jokes and the ridiculous situations the characters are put through, this book takes itself just seriously enough to hold it together. There's an undercurrent of emotional truth running through the story. Milo and Captain Valor's strange relationship develops as the two begin to understand each other's strengths and weaknesses. Milo, of course, is the less mature of the two, a fact which slows down this process considerably. It's also interesting to see the effects these two have on both Kalinius and Steffi. After a few issues, you know, you really can't help but wonder where all this is going. As I said before, the artwork is nice and clean, perfectly suited to this kind of story. If you like the dialogue-heavy style reminiscent of Seinfeld, then you might like this. So far, I guess the biggest weakness in this book would be the lack of action, but again, it's not your typical superhero story. It is different, so I give it 4 out of 5 stars. So next up, like I said, we talked a little bit last week about The Death in Runaways, issue 19, so I'm going to go into a little bit more detail. Written by Brian K. Vaughan, of course, with Mike Norton as guest penciler. By the way, word has it that Brian K. Vaughan is going to be leaving this book after issue 24, replaced, rumor has it, by Joss Whedon. So yeah, check that out. Anyway, it's got Craig Young on inks and Christina Strain on colors. This issue, which has nothing to do with Civil War, thank goodness, comes hot off the heels of the last story arc, which saw one of the young heroes meet her tragic end. It was Gertrude York's, also known as the Chubby One. Not that I'm saying she was chubby, she just wasn't a poster child for anorexia, like fellow runaways Nico and Carolina. She was killed by a young Jeffrey Wilder, who was the leader of the Pride. He was brought into the future by magic. So in the aftermath of this tragedy, the runaways are recuperating in their hideout beneath the La Brea Tar Pits Museum. It seems that Nico, the daughter of Dark Wizards, and Victor, the android son of killer robot Voltron, are romantically involved, and the others don't know about it. This issue opens with the two of them sitting in bed, with their clothes on, and feeling guilty about what they are doing. The next several pages have different members of the team dealing with the grief. Their morning is broken up when a Godzilla-sized demon is accidentally unleashed from an amulet that belonged to the Pride. As the runaways hop in the Leapfrog and gear up for action, the Leapfrog is their choice vehicle. Gert's boyfriend, Chase, tracks down one of the members of the group that brought Jeffrey Wilder out of time, and in doing so, aided in his girlfriend's death. He corners the girl, Lotus, and brandishes a knife, looking like he means to kill her. Instead, he tells her, "We're going to hire you. You work for us now." Interesting, as always. I've been reading this book every month since it started, and I can't really say I've ever been disappointed with it. It always keeps me guessing. Sometimes, like in issue 19, the subplots and the multiple cutaways detract from the story, but reading this as individual issues versus trade paperbacks still pays off through Brian K. Vaughan's classic cliffhangers. The artwork by guest penciler Mike Norton is right on par with the regular penciler, Adrian Alfana, so this issue didn't miss a beat. I give it 4 out of 5 stars. So, Brian, what's happening?
Oh, not a whole lot since I, you know, we kind of pre-record these a little in advance, but the weekend that this is coming out will be one of our B-movie weekends.
The wonderful B-movie nights.
So if I don't understand, you know, why people wouldn't want to do this.
It's cool, though.
Punish themselves.
we laugh about it, but for real, we hook it up. I mean, we get a cookout going and good food, and, you know, we make it worth the time.
Yes, we, you know, have probably, what, 7 or 8 guys come over, and we try to find the worst movie. Just the right,
just the right kind of flavor.
For example, I think we christened these get-togethers with Blackenstein.
Yes, you heard us correctly, Blackenstein.
Now that is, I think it is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think seriously, this beats out. Yeah, this beats out just about anything I've ever seen on Mystery Science Theater. I mean,
you know, I said this when we were watching it, and I'll say it again. The thesis of this movie is that their Frankenstein monster, unlike other Frankenstein monster, is capable of walking immeasurable distances.
Oh, God.
And they intend to back up this thesis with as much evidence as they can possibly show us.
This movie was filmed in real time, pretty much. There were about, gosh, probably 10 scenes that showed Blackenstein walking down from one end of the hallway, you know, maybe 50 feet away towards the camera and turning in a doorway. And they would show you every step that guy took. And the worst was, oh, God, the worst was when he was walking into the factory.
Oh, the chase. There's a chase scene in this movie where... Now the thing that bothers... It's kind of a... It seems like for a while in the 70s and 80s, they would just... They showed some really bad stuff in movies. You know?
God, yes, yeah.
And this is... They didn't show a bunch, but I mean, in this particular movie, you know, Blackenstein shows up and you know, in, I think, more than one occasion where a girl is being assaulted, like she's about to be raped. And so Blackenstein shows up and kills the assailant and then kills the girl. And it's like, why? What's the point?
I guess the whole point was her taking off her shirt for the brief moment before she was strangled.
So there's one scene where they spend a lot of time focusing on this one girl who she looks like she's going to get away. Looks like she's important. And she runs inside a factory. And Blackenstein walks in the factory. Now, I know this because we had to watch him walk all the way in the factory. And I think eventually she just turns a corner and gets killed.
Well, see, they
a long chasing.
Well, they backtracked back and forth through that same 30-foot
like
space.
They could afford one hall. Like the owner said, "I'll let you film here." And they said, "We got to use this hallway.
All right, we got to make this work, people. What can we do? Okay, you run down here. You know, run 15 feet down. Hop up on the bunk bed. Hide there. Blackenstein will walk by. You'll have to wait 20 minutes
and
for
I
this.
Really
just
think that it was called Blackenstein because they couldn't afford any lighting. Because
oh,
it was
gosh.
Such a dark.
That
movie.
Was yeah.
Like, but yeah,
we got some good mileage out of that movie. We got some. Some good,
you know,
good
and
jokes.
Me and Andy the last couple of times have gone into Blockbuster, and it's the thing that's sad is that it used to be that you could just walk into Blockbuster and find bad movies, but there have been so many new movies out that they've kind of phased out all the old 70s and 80s classic
right.
B movies
yeah.
in favor of your you know your current B movies,
which are just, like straight to video,
which aren't that. Aren't the same thing. It's
they're
just
not
the same quality.
It's not the same quality, and they all and you know, but they're all new. They're all just sort of, yeah. Like I said, straight to video. The effects aren't great, and half of them star Antonio Sabato Jr.
Which you know, I imagine our glee when after browsing in Blockbuster for a half an hour, Andy says, "Hey, wait a minute, what's this?" And pulls out a shiny new packaged. Version on DVD of Blackenstein.
Special edition.
Special edition. It had a very nice menu.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one well-packaged turd, is all I'm saying.
It, yeah. That was surprising to find that.
It was very surprising.
I mean, really,
that.
Yeah.
I think we found Vampirella, the Corman.
Oh, man.
That's a bad one.
Roger
right
Daltrey.
There.
You know, can you believe that the lead singer of The Who, The Who is reduced to making Roger Corman stink bombs?
So, yeah, that it's... That we got some good mileage out of that one. I think the last one we saw was Laser Hawk. Was it Laser Blast? It was Laser Hawk.
It was Laser Hawk.
Oh,
thank
sorry.
You very much.
Sorry. Yeah, but I'm not sure what's going to be next. What was the one someone suggested? Motel Hell?
Motel Hell, yeah. You know, that I actually have seen a few minutes of that from Joe Bob Briggs' drive-in movie theater back in the day. He used to have... Joe Bob Briggs... He may have even written a book or two by now, but he he looks like the country singer George Strait. If any of y'all listen to country, just kind of you know dark hair, kind of small eyes, and just kind of this chiseled look. But he's kind of a redneck, but he's so funny. He's an aficionado of B movies, and he used to have a show on the Movie Channel Network late at night on Saturday nights where he would just show these. Pretty bad movies, not Blackenstein level bad, but you know your average run of the mill B movie like Motel Hell or Piranha or you know something of that nature. And before and you know in between, he would always have these little dialogue bits, and he'd take calls from people. Eventually, this show, if I'm not mistaken, switched over to the Turner Network, and this was a few years ago, so I'm not sure if it's still
I've
running
never
or not.
Seen it, so. I have read a review that he did, though. He actually reviewed Serial Killer
he
Bob.
He reviewed... Oh, Serial Killer Bob. Yeah.
Which, we'll leave that one for another time.
Yeah, if y'all ever get the chance to see Serial Killer Bob, and just so you can see what Photoshopped blood looks like on the TV screen, give it a shot.
Yeah. So, but we mentioned, you know, there's a new MST... Mystery Science Theater 3000, Volume 11 is out.
Yep.
Volume 12, I think, is going to be out in February. But there's been an increasing number of MST video showing up on YouTube. They've got the movie out there now, which I had ordered off eBay. I'd seen the movie once, and the thing about the movie is it's shorter than an actual TV show, one of their episodes, and I've read interviews with the guys who, you know, the Mystery Science Theater guys, where they talked about how much the studio got in and kept making, don't tell this joke or do this. We don't get this. And you can kind of tell that it took a toll on the riffs and stuff, but it's worth having because it's, I was looking on eBay for it and I bought it, and then like 2 weeks later I found the whole thing's up on YouTube. So, yeah. But, They've got a bunch of stuff on there, some of the like special edition tapes that they Best Brains used to send out.
Oh,
like,
really?
The blooper reels and the scrapbook and all that stuff is up on YouTube now. But if you're a Mystery Science Theater 3000 fan, go to YouTube. Just type in MST3K, and they've got full-length movies up there, and you know, like The Wild World of Batwomen.
Oh my goodness! That's one of those. Batwoman is one of those ones that I can't even really watch.
Really,
it's just so bad. The Mexican wrestler part is funny, but other than that,
there's a few that are so bad I really can't watch. The incredibly strange creatures that stopped living and became crazy mixed up zombies. Did you ever see that?
What? No,
you never saw that.
That's an actual.
I really can't watch that one. It's just so. It makes me feel.
Dirty.
Yeah, it's like, why did I watch it? Even the MST treatment.
I kind of felt that way with Squirm.
Mm. And the Sci-Fi Channel used to show that one all the time. Yeah. Like when they canceled the show in 99 and they continued to show it for 4 years, which doesn't make any sense.
But, yeah, yeah.
They would always show Squirm. I was like,
The only good part that you can that you can take away from Squirm, I think, is the short, the No Springs.
Was that on Remember Squirm? That?
Yeah, that was on Squirm.
I didn't know that was on
No
Squirm.
Springs. It had the little. Yeah, it was this 50s short, and it had this guy. Basically this guy wishes he gets angry at fixing. He's doing home repair, and he gets angry at fixing stuff. Who says? I wish there were no springs anywhere. And all of a sudden, this little demon imp person, Jiminy Cricket. Yeah, it's this little animated kind of Jiminy Cricket guy who appears and says, No springs? Yeah. Do you know what the world would be like if there were no springs? And he goes on this tangent, and it's actually pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. You were saying something about a spider movie?
Well, you led in with the Mystery Science Theater. It has one of the new DVD sets has Giant Spider Invasion on it. And you were talking about how, you know, the spiders and that, you remember that from, you know, when you were young. So that kind of got me thinking, if any of y'all have ever seen Kingdom of the Spiders. Sometime it's either early 80s or late 70s, but it stars William Shatner, Kingdom of the Spiders, and it's got tarantulas like take over this sort of small town, and it's actually not I haven't seen it in many years, so it's probably bad, just my memory, but it's a pretty decent little B movie, nowhere near the level of Blackenstein, but in that movie, a little bit of trivia, if I'm not mistaken, the music that they used was pulled from old Twilight Zone episodes. Because I remember watching Twilight Zone reruns, and then like, where have I heard this music? Kingdom of the Spiders!
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure, but I'm not positive, that DeForest Kelly was in Night of the Lepus.
He was!
Was he?
Yes!
I mean, was Leonard Nimoy in any giant creature movies?
No, not giant creature movies. He was in the 70s version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Donald Sutherland.
Well, he was also in the video for his song, The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins. So please tell me you've seen that. You've never seen the video where he sang a song about Bilbo Baggins? Oh my goodness. When we get done with this podcast, we are going on the internet.
Internet search time.
Well, everybody, I get to.
You showed me the William Shatner bit where he sings Lucy. No, it's not Lucy in the Sky.
Rocket Man.
Yeah. That was pretty funny. I especially like the little bit where he's talking and then little William Shatner steps out.
Little William Shatner.
And start singing too.
Well, you know, and then there's that loose, drunk William Shatner with his ties undone. It's like the third one.
And he's got the cigarette.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. That's
wow.
You are about to be introduced to a whole new world. Whole new side. The softer side of Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, this is what I miss for not having high speed.
Well, that's why you come over here.
Yeah.
So we'll have a little expedition on the internet here to broaden your education.
But yeah, B-movies. Let's see. What are some other pretty memorable...
You know, I was trying to think of some other options, some attainable options for the B-movie night.
For B-movie night.
Because we're recording this before it happens, so I don't know what we've chosen.
Exactly.
When this airs, it'll have been over.
Exactly. A lot of times for us, it's kind of last minute.
It is. But and you can't really rely... Netflix is a great place to find... they have pretty much any movie that's on DVD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if Motel Hell will fit our requirements. Because it can't just be a bad movie. It has to be a certain type of bad movie.
Exactly.
But maybe it does. I don't know. I think Sean said he had seen it. We'll have to check with
Sean, yeah.
And see how it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I've Laserhawk was really bad, and I know you didn't see the whole thing, but in case you've never seen Laserhawk, it's a story about these kids, these aliens that... it was very confusing because it was like 250 million years ago, these aliens crash-landed on Earth, and their consciousness came forward in time in the year 1985 and inhabited the body of three people. And then the movie takes place in 1995. And it took us forever to figure out, is this supposed to be 1985 or 1980?
Yeah, because, yeah, they had all these touches that, well, this isn't, you know, this it's got 80s. Mortal Kombat 3. It's not
like, there's a picture of Bill Clinton. What? Yeah. What is going on?
Yeah, pretty bad kind of set pieces where you could obviously tell it wasn't 85.
But it's got Mark Hamill. So Luke Skywalker's in it for like 20 minutes. And he does a little cameo. And, basically, these kids find this ship called the Laserhawk, and they go up and defeat the bad guy, and then they go off into space to defeat the bad guy other places.
And I love, yeah.
Oh, the favorite thing about it. You want to tell them what the favorite thing
is? Why don't you tell them?
Is that one of the main characters in this is a comic book artist. He has two issues out of his book. And he's filthy rich. He has a butler in a mansion.
He has a butler!
A butler in a mansion. And the company he's doing this book through has given him a $50,000 advance. I want to know, where is my $50,000 advance and my butler? When do I get the mansion? I'm still waiting.
Man, that must be one of those big two contract things.
I guess. So
That was funny. I loved how all the plot points were revealed through a comic book. It's got to be true. It's all here in the comic book.
So, you know, if I would recommend renting Laserhawk with at least five other people,
mm-hmm.
but don't try it on mm-hmm. your own. It's not worth it. I think I don't know. If you have any suggestions for us for future B movies, you can, you know, drop us a line and let us know. Andy's email address is
andy@gravyboy.com.
And mine is brian@gravyboy.com. We also have a voicemail number that you can call and leave us a message at. That number is 208-692-5102. And Andy, you have anything else to add before we head out this week?
All right. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next time.